Good afternoon. Welcome to this afternoon's edition of the Rich Urban Show, where we bring you news and views from the unification principal point of view. We're very happy to continue this series of interviews with the primary candidates. And today we have Mike Allers Jr. He's running in District 99 for delegate. So please introduce yourself.
Hey, Richard. Great to be on. Yes, my name is Mike Allers Jr. I'm an educator and conservative commentator. And I'm ready to run for delegate. I'm very excited about running for delegate. And it's a terrific opportunity because I think we need some fresh blood in Charleston to really get things done here.
Okay. So what do you think the most important issue facing West Virginia right now is?
So I actually think it's education. And here's why. Not only because I'm an educator, but education really is at the heart of everything. We can't have great job creation without education. We cannot lure families here if we do not have a good education system. We are dead last in the nation. We are now behind Mississippi. That's an embarrassment, and that cannot happen. So I'm very, very committed to completely overhauling our education system and completely shaking things up. Just here in Jefferson County, you know, the school boards are allowed to pick their curriculums. And a lot of the time, school boards, you know, we see all over the country picking, you know, kind of these far left agendas when it comes to their curriculum. Well, that's because we give them license to. And, you know, West Virginia is supposed to be a non-common core state, but school districts are picking common core curriculum, which is insane. And under common core, states far worse. In fact, their scores drop by like 20%, and along with their proficiency in reading and math. So that absolutely needs to stop. We also need to lure teachers here by actually paying them what they're due. So that needs to be top of mind. You know, in West Virginia, one out of four adults cannot read above a sixth grade reading level.
Okay.
That's insane. That's a recipe for disaster. So
I didn't know that.
I definitely believe, yeah, it has proven several studies. So we absolutely need to turn things around here, and that could happen through West Virginia. And West Virginia could lead the way instead of being dead last if we put our heads together and try something completely new.
Okay. Some of that will be a little out of your control, like the school budget. But the curriculum, I guess that's the purview of the legislature. Let me ask you a related question.
Yeah.
So you may or may not know, like, our nonprofit works in the field of youth education, specifically helping you succeed through, say, abstinence from sex before marriage, and being a good example for their peers and looking forward to successful family formation. So would you agree or not agree that I believe that the basic, you know, problems of society are due to the fact that, like, right now we have 47% of births in West Virginia outside of wedlock, and that drives really all other kinds of issues. Now, that's not necessarily a government issue, but it's certainly related to many issues like we're talking about, like education or other types of policy issues. Do you have any comment on that or thoughts on it?
Yeah, and I'm actually glad you brought that up, because I am not only the pro-life candidate, I want to establish a culture of life, and that means establishing a culture of family. And, you know, a lot of the time when it comes to especially pro-life, it's either, you know, you are pro-choice or you are pro-life, and there's really no nuance with a lot of these things, but everyone forgets to be pro-family. And we have to have a plan to incentivize not only marriage, but family. There's ways, for example, Josh Hawley is doing it in the U.S. Senate. Carrie Lake is advocating for paid family leave. Not only do we have to be paid family leave, we have to incentivize families. That means investing in childcare. That means giving support to these young mothers so they don't have to make that awful choice, right? Being there for them, having them grow a family and incentivize it. We also, in order to do that, Richard, we have to have the jobs to sustain families. Sometimes it's easier because it's been incentivized for men and women to stay apart, to not be married because of certain government handouts and incentives.
Right.
We have created this culture. So in order to reverse that, we have to take it back by, number one, not only really talking marriage and family up, but providing the proper incentives, because in this horrible economy, it's hard even if you're married to put a roof over your head, to put food on the table.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
So I think all these are tied together. Absolutely.
Okay. So also related issues. So abortion is always a hot topic issue. And, you know, I do personally think conception begins at life. But here's my thing. Mm-hmm. Why not take it a step back and focus on, like you say, the family culture, i.e. don't have sex until you're married. Wouldn't that eliminate, like, if we can do that? And I've been doing that. I do that with you. I worked in D.C. Yeah. I worked East River, inner city, you know, with youth. They receive the message. You know, it helps them, helps everyone. So my here's my kind of the short point is, like, if we do that, wouldn't we eliminate, like, 80% of the need for abortion? Isn't there, like, too much focus on abortion, not enough on the steps ahead? Like you say, family culture, yes, or specifically abstinence before marriage.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And I believe that, especially, it all comes down to, again, education. And when it comes to the issue of abstinence or why women are having abortion, let's say, number one, it is socioeconomic, right? If they cannot afford it, unfortunately. Well, then we have to be there for those mothers and obviously mm-hmm. steer them away from that and towards this culture of marriage. When it comes to education, and I want to know your thoughts on this, actually. I'm a father. I have a 3-year-old son and I have a daughter on the way. And when you go to the sonogram room, when you see all these behind the scenes, that's what should be honestly taught in schools. Like, because this should not be brand new to me just because I'm having a kid. So a lot of not only men are unprepared, women are unprepared what they're going to be facing. Right. So I don't want to scare anybody away from obviously from jumping into sex. Right. But at the same time, they have to know the real world consequences. And I think if they saw the images and what they have to do, and like, I think it would be much easier for people to stay away. Right.
I think some states do require at least one or more. I think explaining or showing, there's some really cool.
Yeah,
it's a little different, but it's on the same line. A really cool, and sometimes we use this in our program too. A really cool video of the baby growing inside the womb, and that is like very awe-inspiring.
Well, yeah, and it's awe-inspiring, and I think men and women would benefit because not only I think would they be encouraged to be like, okay, maybe not for me right now, but also they would be, I think, ready. It would be priming them for a culture of family, for a culture of life, because they'd have a full understanding. And also, Richard, on the pro-life front, a lot of people say, well, that's not a human life, right, on the pro-choice side. But then they will physically be able to see in live time. I remember my son was this big, and he was moving all around, and they're like, he could feel pain. He's like the size of a lime, and he's moving everywhere. So for kids, I think, to see that at a younger age, mm-hmm. they'll be able to be like, well, whoa. And I think the abortion issue goes away.
Yeah, and there is clear standards, by the way, for abstinence center education. It's called Title V. It was actually implemented, I think, when Bill Clinton was president. Any grants that went for abstinence center education had to follow Title V. And it's quite clear. There's 8 standards. So it's not like it's a mystery. School boards or schools can adopt those standards if they want, and I think we should. And in fact, our organization has made up a resolution for abstinence center education that I'd like to see adopted here in Jefferson County. All righty. I do want to ask you about some other issues. What about solar farms? Like, we've seen, like, one of your opponents, the incumbent, has sponsored bills, 2 different sessions, to make solar farms a right anywhere without and bypass local zoning. So we see the Blake solar farm in our county, 3 others approved. What's your take on it? Are you happy with that? You think it's not a good development? It's done the wrong way, right way? What's your opinion?
Well, look, a lot of people are going to use the argument, well, you're infringing on property rights if you tell someone what to do. And my thing is, should we be investing in all forms of energy? Absolutely. However, in particular with solar and this whole push to encourage farmers to sell their land for solar farms, it does not work, number one, because especially if you care about the environment. It has been proven that over 2 years, solar actually doesn't work. They lose their value. They depreciate, and they actually lose their function, and the metals poison out. So it is actually hurting the environment, not helping us, right? If you want to put a solar panel on your house, fine. But a whole field of them, not only does it ruin our look as a county and as an eyesore, but it's not effective. And then when those solar panels cease to work, we are left with hunks of Chinese metal. It's mostly Chinese metal all over Jefferson County. So I believe in investing in other forms of energy. Obviously, our old standby in West Virginia is coal. Right. We should be pursuing heavily natural gas, especially in the Eastern Panhandle, and nuclear energy. The chains have been lifted off of that. We should be embracing that. And solar, I think it works for your house. If it's those individual panels, a whole field of them does not work. Just ask Texas. When Texas got froze over, all those solar fields ceased to function and got destroyed.
I heard it was the windmills.
And wind is a problem, too.
The windmills.
Windmills kill animals.
I don't know about the solar ones, but yeah.
All of it didn't work. It was because the ice was glazed over, so it didn't actually help the solar panels at all. So it is not a good form of energy. I know the incumbent pretends that he has nothing to do with it, but he's been pushing this for a long time.
What about the issue of recently Jim Justice vetoed a bill that would have given partial exemptions for vaccination to private schools and virtual schoolers, or some virtual schoolers, but he vetoed it. What's your opinion on what's usually called vaccination choice, medical freedom, the right of parents to choose whether their children are vaccinated or not? And what about West Virginia's policy of no vaccination, no school? What do you think about that? Do you support that, or would you support exemptions and doing away altogether with vaccine mandates?
Well, here's the thing. I think we should take a real nuanced approach to that because, number one, especially with COVID, that shot was developed very quickly. Obviously, President Trump was doing his best to help.
Well, here I'm talking about that's not one of the mandate vaccines, but go ahead.
About the vaccine. And I understand the hesitancy there.
I was just pointing out here, I'm talking about specifically the school vaccine mandates, which don't happen to include COVID, but go ahead.
Sure. And I think religious exemptions should be granted. I do think it's foolish, frankly, that West Virginia does not have religious exemptions. However, the governor vetoed it. I think he did make the right decision because I do think there are some people that feel like, and I work in education. A lot of the issues when it comes to like the vaccines in Chicago, this is happening. A lot of illegal immigrant children are coming into these school systems unvaccinated.
Okay.
And we're seeing a rise in Southwest Virginia in mumps and measles. So I think we have to take a nuanced approach. I think we could respect medical freedom, but when it comes to vaccines that we know are proven, polio, mumps, measles, I don't think those should be removed. I think that's what the governor was trying to do. And I think you can have both. I think we can be careful with religious exemptions, but when so many people are coming over our southern border completely unvaccinated, that puts American kids in danger and teachers.
Well, so you kind of contradicted yourself. Or just to clarify, so you said yes, but no. Could you clarify?
Well, no, I said religious exemptions, I think, obviously should be granted. But when it comes to standbys that have been really well proven,
could you get an exemption for mumps, measles, or polio, as you said, or those would not be included? Say a religious exemption.
If those would not be, well, I mean, that
in your
it
opinion.
Would have to be up to them. If it is a religious exemption, yes, but then precautions should be monitored on that student. And that's that's only fair.
Like what?
So if you come from Guatemala and that's your religious exemption, right? So we have to be careful.
Okay.
I think West Virginia, we also have an older population.
All right. So
it's not an immediate yes or no, but yeah, go on.
Okay. Let's look at the issue of another kind of freedom. So during COVID, Governor Justice put in place a lot of mandates. And they didn't just expire in 60 days, whatever. They went on indefinitely because the Constitution of West Virginia doesn't give any limits. So the House of Delegates had a good bill to fix that. I believe it was right, if I got right, 2021. But it was gutted in the Senate by, especially by a Senator Trump. And then after it was gutted, of course, it was unacceptable to the House. Anyway, it killed it. So bottom line is it never was fixed. Would you move to fix the problem of endless mandates? Could they be so they could be reviewed by legislature, time limited, et cetera?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, obviously, when it came to COVID and mandates, I think the governor was just trying to do his best because no one really knew how to handle that situation, right? But it opened the door to endless mandates, which could be taken advantage of. We all know that. And as the science has developed, we know that a lot of these mandates, like, for example, masks, did not make sense. Now that we have enough science in front of us, we should be able to absolutely revise that. So no mandate should be endless. Emergency mandates, I understand, because you have to do what you have to do to make a split second decision.
They supposedly were emergency, but in our Constitution, like some states, they changed the law so there was a limit, or maybe they already had a limit. But in our Constitution, it says you can have different mandates, or well, but then it's not clear when they end.
Well, then it absolutely has to be amended.
What about, you're in education? Are you for choice in education? Like, what do you think about the HOPE scholarship program?
So I believe, obviously, that children should be able to get the best education. However, you cannot really have choice if you don't have the best choices available. And right now, specifically in Jefferson County, I know the HOPE scholarship has really been touted. But if you want to go, for example, to Catholic school, you have to go all the way to Berkeley County. There's actually no options for a Catholic education in Jefferson County, which puts people that don't have transportation at a disadvantage. If you want to go to Eastern Prep, that's fine. But Eastern Prep, their proficiency rates are actually below the public school.
So I actually think that even
though choice is important, yeah, the charter school is actually way behind the public school.
Okay.
And I believe public education is a right. And I think we have to, I think it's actually cheaper to reform public schools than, for example, the HOPE scholarship. One of the side effects of it is it's setting up basically a second Department of Education, meaning if everybody's just getting funds to go elsewhere, technically you're just setting up another department. And the problem that I have with the HOPE scholarship, yes, really? It does allow choice. It allows choice. But the problem that I have with it is this. If you want to go somewhere else for school, you should be able to, but you have to stay in West Virginia. I don't think it's right that you can take West Virginia taxpayer money, $5,000, and I could technically go send my kid to Catholic school in Maryland.
Yeah, but you just said there was no Catholic school. Or there isn't any in Berkeley County.
No. In Jefferson County, there is in Berkeley County, St. Joseph's, but you have to drive 20 minutes, 30 minutes to get there. But what I'm saying is if I wanted private school, I could send my kid if I'm in Southwestern, I could send them to Kentucky. If I am in the Eastern Panhandle, I could send them to Maryland. That's sending our tax dollars into other states. So that benefits other states. That doesn't benefit our kids or educational options here.
Well,
problem that I do have with it.
All right. Okay, if I might ask, are you teaching in public schools like in Jefferson County?
So I am a public school teacher. However, and this is actually one of the reasons I was inspired to run. I have to teach in Maryland to make a decent salary because especially in this economy, you cannot afford to live here, especially as the cost of living rises. So I make $15,000 more teaching in Maryland than I would in Jefferson County. I want to fix that. I don't want to personally leave where I go. I believe you should teach where you live, but the reality is people can't. And a lot of people in the Eastern Panhandle, and West Virginia has become far too dependent that people are going to work somewhere else. And I want to keep people here. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't have to drive 20, 30 minutes to get a decent paying job. I should be able to work right up the street, right in the community that I go to, that my son, where my son goes to school, and be able to make a decent salary and afford the mortgage.
Yeah, there's talk about locality pay, but it doesn't seem to get anywhere. Passed.
It never gets passed, which is why another approach should be taken. And my approach would be actually proposing an amendment to not only be able to look at the public schools and their what they're spending their money on, but gut central office. So you actually wouldn't have to raise any taxes if you actually got rid of several of these 90 grand positions and funnel that down to the teachers.
Well, I've been talking about that with the Board of Education candidates. I've interviewed a couple. Yeah, that's a big issue. Okay.
I'm also the only candidate proposing that school superintendents should be publicly elected.
Mm-hmm.
That way, if we want to talk school choice, that's the ultimate choice because the superintendent makes a lot of these decisions.
So that would have to be decided by the legislature, right?
Yes. And that would also provide a natural check on the Board of Education because Amendment 4 failed.
I don't remember what Amendment 4 was for.
Amendment 4 was basically the legislature to basically review the curriculum and give a little more power to the legislature to make sure that, you know, leftist agendas aren't being passed in school.
Right, right, right.
And to take back control that way.
Okay.
And that's how it should have been sold, but it wasn't. And people thought that, oh, they're just trying to dissolve school boards. So it got misadvertised. But since that bill failed, if we simply put the power of the people, put the power in the hands of the people and elected our superintendents like they do in North Carolina and Florida, I think you'd see a different result.
Okay, fair enough. What about election integrity? Do we need to do anything different in our election system? Like in recent years, I'd say since 2016, we have now moved, and I've talked to some of the Secretary of Governor and Secretary of State candidates, and now all counties are using electronic voting, no more paper ballots. Is that good, bad, indifferent? Do you have any ideas about things we should do to improve election integrity?
Yeah, well, and I'm actually the candidate with the toughest, positions on election integrity. I think every time you vote, you should be able to seal it with a thumbprint.
Okay.
So that way, we are able to spot and catch voter fraud in live time. If that thumbprint appears in a county over or a county down below, we gotcha. We're able to weed you out.
Yeah. You mean when you vote in person or by absentee ballot?
Either way, you should be able to seal it with a thumbprint. That way your thumbprint verifies it.
What about, so when you're presenting your voter ID or driver's license or whatever, that's not good enough?
I mean, you could do that, but the fact is, in North Carolina,
we do that, don't we? We're supposed to.
Yeah, we already do that. We already do that. But there's been record in other states where that same person has voted in another county.
I see.
And they were able to somehow get away with it.
What about the issue of now we have like automatic voter registration at the DMV? Are you for that? Mm-hmm. And also, as far as I know, and I've been asking and talking about with some candidates, there's no verification of whether people are citizens or not. Maybe there's a box you check. Should we fix that? Shouldn't we check if somebody is a citizen? And my question is, why are we registering automatically? Shouldn't they register themselves? Do you have any comment on it?
Sure. Well, I mean, in other states, you have to register yourself. I think we're able to just streamline it. I mean, look, I think all people, you know, we should be able to, if you're a U.S. citizen, if you're a West Virginian, should be definitely, and it should be encouraged to vote and to participate
in our
great democratic republic. Obviously, I think my assumption, I'm trying to remember back when I moved to West Virginia. I'm trying to remember back the steps I did because I've lived in Virginia. I've lived in New York. Obviously, the processes were different there. But I would assume that if you are registered to vote and you have your address and everything else, that's some sort of background check to be run if you are a citizen. However, if there was a box, I don't remember if there was one. If there isn't, there absolutely should be.
But my point is, it's a fact that the Biden administration has been giving to illegal immigrants papers telling them to vote, even though it's not legal since they're not citizens. But most places, if not all, don't really check whether you're a citizen or not. Maybe it has a little box on there, you know, saying, are you a citizen?
Well, we should definitely strengthen that in West Virginia.
Would you do anything to adjust taxes or property taxes? Like I don't know, I'm a senior, and for me, the biggest tax, I mean, my wife and I aren't really high income, so personal property tax doesn't really factor in much, if hardly at all, but property tax is a big deal. I own like 2 houses, you know, so it's a lot of money. It's thousands of dollars. It doesn't matter, you know, how much you make. You do get a homestead exemption if you're over like 65, but, you know, it can be a very large amount of money, and property taxes are much higher for whatever reason. Maybe you can tell me over here, like in, I think, Berkeley and Jefferson County compared to other counties, they're way higher, like double, 3 or 4 times more. So is that a problem? I mean, I don't know. It's interesting.
Well, I think to alleviate that, you know, and we also have, we're in a bad economy now as well. So we really feel the pinch every step we take. I definitely think that instead of going 12 rounds with the governor, like the House of Delegates and the Senate did, they should just let him repeal the whole income tax. And that would have created huge relief, huge growth for the state. Now we did a partial reduction of it. To me, that's just not enough. New Hampshire is a state. It's a purple state, similar to us, though, when it comes to, you know, its dynamics, its rural beauty. But they were able to, they completely got rid of their income tax, and it's still affordable there, and people benefited, and they were able to put money in people's pockets. So I think not only would that attract businesses, it would definitely alleviate this, you know, the financial hardship that we're having in Jefferson and Berkeley County. So we would feel it immediately. And it was unfortunate that it took so long just to get a reduction. I mean, they fought him on it for like 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a Republican legislature.
Yeah. Okay, maybe it's just me. To me, the property taxes are a much bigger deal. Especially, and maybe I'm a little biased, but, you know, 78% of our property tax is going to the school. And like you say, the office is very bloated, and 40% goes to the excess levy. So, you know, it's a lot of money. Would you like to, if you care to, differentiate yourself from your primary opponents and say anything else that you would like to, maybe that we didn't cover or and talk
sure.
about?
Sure. Well, look, I believe that I'm the only one in this race that's going to be an effective legislator. Now, the incumbent will say that he's done all these things, but co-signing bills does not mean that you're an effective legislator. That just means you co-signed on someone's idea and thought their idea was a good idea. So it's really taking credit for someone else's victory. I have an approach that's going to prioritize education, that's going to uplift our kids, that's going to get real jobs into the district by thinking boldly and differently. I'm not going down there to be anybody's friend. I'm not going to cozy up to the establishment, and I'm not going to cozy up to the fringes either. I'm going to speak for the people of my county and of my district and get whatever it takes to get it done. And I feel like I'm the only one in this race that's going out there, that's meeting voters. It's in the car now because I was just meeting some voters right here in Charlestown. I'm the only one that's out and about really getting the message out to people.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think that's what people deserve in a legislator. They deserve someone that's going to be active and thinks like them and is one of them and is going to think outside the box. You know, I don't believe in, you know, that, hey, vote, give me another chance, vote for me to continue so I can keep co-signing onto people's bills. That's not an argument, you know, I believe is an effective one. We are 50th in healthcare, 50th in education. So clearly none of the incumbents are doing the job.
Yeah. Well, I think Daphne's
we're really
out there.
Far down.
I interviewed her.
And that
her.
Needs to change.
She's going around too. I don't know about Wayne. Well, I thank you so much for being on, and we discussed several issues. I hope this helps clarify for voters, and also we'll put it on the Rich Urban Show. It'll be on any podcast platform, and the video will be at visionroot.org. So yeah, I really appreciate your time this afternoon.
Hey, thank you so much, Richard. It was great. And hey, vote for Mike Allers May 14th.
Thank you again. All right.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now.